Welcome to the Crude Life Podcast, because when you're making money, sometimes life can just be crude. Hey folks, how you doing? My name is Jason Spies. I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist and talk show host. And on today's episode, we talk with Mike Marcille, CEO of Orange Property Management, as well as Bakken.com. Talk about a variety of things, from the housing market out in the Bakken oil fields to organized crime, plus what the Bakken future holds in the world of market and retail and all kinds of different things. Mike Marcille, the CEO of Orange Property Management, as well as Bakken.com, will join us in just a moment. But first, I want to remind you good folks to go to our website, click on our sponsors link, and take a look and see if there's anybody there that you might recognize, because we're asking you to please support our sponsors. Reach out and say hello, and who knows, maybe you might want to do some business with them. The reason we're asking you is because they literally keep our lights on. It seems everywhere I go these days, someone is telling me about the success of Hatch Coaching. Listen to what professional speaker Mark J. Lindquist has to say.
To see Eric Hatch grow his business and then start to share it with other people, I think is one of those great steps in life. You know, what do you do in society? You succeed at a thing and then you teach other people how you did it. And now to see Eric duplicating his genius across the country, I'm telling you, there's a world changer down the street, and his name is Eric Hatch.
For more information, call 701-212-1572 or visit coachingwithhatch.com. That's coachingwithhatch.com. Welcome, folks, to the Crude Life Podcast here, the big interview with Mike Marcille on Bakken.com, part of our content and distribution share that we're very excited about, and advertising share as well, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. But right now, we're excited because Mike Marcille is one of the prominent housing authorities out in western North Dakota. He owns over 200 properties.
No more than that. We own and manage about 800 across the state, but probably 500 out in western North Dakota.
So about 500 out in western North Dakota, 800 across the state. I just wanted that to back up what I was referring to.
12 different communities.
12 different communities. And the reason why I think he's an expert is not because he owns those particular properties, which is part of it, but because he got in there beforehand. He actually was in the Bakken back in 2007 before the $100 oil took off. So he saw the pre-boom, he saw the boom, and the post-boom. And what he's saying right now is that the Bakken should be national news for the housing, because you've got one of the biggest stories happening in the United States right now, which is low rent, high wages equals some of the largest discretionary income in the United States. In fact, there was a study that was just done. They ranked North Dakota sixth. Both Mike and I, Mr. Marcille and I, that we disagree with that. North Dakota should be near the top. Now, we have a different criteria than they have. Mike, how are you doing today? Just wanted to start off with that intro a little bit. Good. So let's start off by describe your property and Orange Property Management, what you guys are doing
well,
up in Western.
I think what's interesting, Jason, is we probably should step back and look at what happened prior to 2007.
Sure.
Because I think that historically there are some trends that occurred in past cycles that are playing out, and some that are not, that did not play out in this particular trend.
This is a new cycle.
Well, it's not a new cycle in the context of commodities increasing and decreasing.
Correct.
What has marked this one as different than some of the past ones, in my opinion, is the difference in the banking and the credit exposures that we're seeing in the last cycle in the 1980s and this cycle today. And I think it's really important because it does play into a lot of infrastructure. Let me back up to the last cycle in the mid-80s. We had, in 1986 to 1988, a similar type boom, but it was 10% the size of what we see today. At that time, we had both a coal energy boom, and we also had the oil and gas. And as you've pointed out many times in your reporting, we know where the oil is today. Back then when they were wildcatting, there was a lot of speculation, and I would say that it was a lot more mom and pop like back then. This is really this particular cycle was marked by huge amounts of public money and a lot of sophisticated private equity investment. What we didn't see, and I was in a banking meeting yesterday with a pretty prominent bank from Western North Dakota, we didn't see the banks in this cycle take on the exposure that they had done in the mid-80s. A good example of that was a bank called Midwest Federal in Minot, had taken a lot of exposure and actually failed. It was a very prominent bank failure back in the I think late 80s or early 90s. And it had a lot to do with the old the FDIC. It was that Keating thing. It was the SNL crisis of that time. If you remember, interest rates were very high back then in the mid-80s or the early 80s, mid-80s. And many of the people that were speculating were borrowing lots of credit. And so one of the problems that happened in that cycle was the credit exposure caused massive amounts of defaults. In this cycle, what we saw, we're not seeing that at all. What we saw is the local and regional lenders really sat it out to a certain extent. They played a little bit on the, you know, with local builders that they had good relationships with, high guarantees. But you saw publicly traded companies like Blackstone, you saw publicly traded oil and gas companies, and they had access to different capital markets than in the previous cycle. So as a consequence, what we have not seen in this cycle has been massive amounts of bust. Okay, mm-hmm. What we've seen is a lot of great assets, billions of dollars of assets that sort of lay in the ground, but a compression in value. So I think it's important to understand that I bought buildings that were built in 1984 and were abandoned in 1990 and in essence boarded up and in some cases demolished. We're just not seeing that. So
I remember you bought a part like an 8-plex for $16,000.
No, I bought a 36-plex for $50,000.
36-plex.
Yeah, in Western North Dakota. Yeah. This is pre-boom, guys.
Right.
And the other thing I think it's important to understand is just not too long ago, you know, we're looking at 10 years ago, when we worked with the city back in 2006 and 7, and we were having a conversation about housing, at that time, there was a housing shortage in Williston. And it was because from the previous cycle, there had not been any new construction of buildings in about 25 years. And so the city had commissioned a study back in 2002 that said, hey, we are really lacking new housing. And this was in Williston. This is before the 2006 timeline. So when we went to Williston, we actually built, we were building new apartments based on, not anything to do with the oil boom, we were building based on a housing study of substandard housing that was really needed in the community. So we didn't go out there at all with any expectation about oil and gas. What happened in 08 by the time we finished that project was obviously then the $130 oil. But what's interesting about that is at that time, and I think it's important to kind of somewhat dissect what has occurred, at that time in 08 and 09, we had a national recession, right? Mm-hmm. The Great Recession. And nobody was buying in yet to this shale thing at all. So what they saw on the ground was a lot of activity, and the oil companies were kind of saying this is what it is. But the people, the policymakers, I'll remember who was our legislator from Tioga?
Scarple. Bob Scarple.
Yeah, I remember Bob Scarple at an event in 2008 in Tioga. And Bob got up on stage and he goes, this is not what you think it is. This is a lot of hype. This is not going to last. And he laid out for about 30 minutes why this was not a real deal. And a lot of people in the room just were kind of agreeable, and they said, yeah, you know, we've seen this kind of come and go before. And then there was a group of people, a small segment at that time, were going, no, this is different. This technology is really different. And I think at the time, Bob was saying, look, I mean, when it's costing $100 to, you know, drill one of these things and it takes 6 months, it's not economically viable. Now, we all know technology has really compressed a lot of the extraction in the oil and gas industry. So really from 2008 to 2010, there was what I call suspended disbelief. I would meet with bankers and policymakers and housing folks and people that own departments, and they said, Mike, you're crazy. We wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. I won't name names, but these are some really smart people, and they were really fantastically interesting to talk to at the time. And I said, you know, I don't know, guys. I think there's an underlying need outside oil and gas. And so we were never really kind of bought in fully to that. It wasn't really, Jason, until 2011 that we saw what I call the significant, okay, this is real, this has lasted. Mm-hmm. And that's when we saw some local development occur, primarily, you know, Dickinson. We saw some of the local groups.
Housing now we're talking about.
Not just housing. I think in the motel segment, hotel motel, we saw a lot of that come from Minneapolis. Really what we saw was when the private equity firms started to get involved with massive, you know, capital infrastructure. And that was the time in 13 when I exited. I said, look, I'm not a smart enough guy to understand what these guys do.
And I should clarify, when I said housing, I was referring to the long-term stay hotels and apartments.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what the Bakken saw right away.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. Early in the cycle, around 2010, a friend of mine was a guy named Brian Lash, who owned
Target Logistics.
So
Brian, friend of the program.
Yeah, and Brian is a fantastically fun guy. I'll just say the funnest
smooth
guy.
Smooth as silk.
Funnest guy I've ever hung out with. Like, you know, he go, hey, Marcel, we're flying in on the jet, and we want to pick you up. And so they'd pick me up, and so I would go with them, and I went to Houston, and we would go and fly the Hess and Halliburton guys with us. And so I got to be a fly on the wall into the industry at that time. What Target Logistics was saying to the folks in the public was very different from what they were saying to me on the plane. Mm-hmm. They were trying to get out of that business as soon as possible. I'm just telling you, after 24 months in that business, they had made a lot of money, and they said, we need to get out because they could see the writing of the wall. There was going to be a massive amount of competition and a massive amount of capital, primarily because Jim Cramer on CNBC every day would be in New York on Wall Street talking about this Bakken thing. And, you know, spent enough time around Wall Street guys to know that they follow trends. And so they were like, hey, we got to be a part of that. And in addition to that, we saw a lot of foreign capital come in. That's where I started to get worried about the transparency with things like the Industrial Commission, the Bank of North Dakota. And I saw some things, you know, the land board, the trust. We've had some issues around that, and I didn't feel like the state was equipped at that time to really even address some of the influx of sophisticated money and sophisticated people that were coming into the state. And I'll make a prediction on this show, okay? I'm just going to lay it out there. At some point in time, I think that we will find that there was some fraud. And I don't know what it is or where it is, and I'm just being very anecdotal about this. But we had some very, very sophisticated organized crime people that were operating in the western part of the state. And I suspect that we saw money laundering occur in some of these housing projects. I've gone on the record just saying that I've looked at three or four projects recently that I've looked at that had no business getting built in North Dakota ever. And I can't, you know, I'm not making an allegation, I'm not saying that anything nefarious did happen, but from a gut perspective, I just said, this is crazy. Like, what was the modus operandi for these investments? And so, time will tell. You know, I watched the American Greed episode about Murder Fryer. I mean, there was that kind of stuff that got attention, but I really question, you know, with the billions of dollars that came through. Now, here's the good news. That's really pulled back to more of a normalization. Mm-hmm. For example, in Watford City, we're talking about housing today. There was no permitting. There was no best practices. There was no city planners. They just railroaded through. And, of course, you have to remember that North Dakota for 70 years, Jason, depopulated. You know, I'm a fifth-generation North Dakota.
I just said the other day that our last census, I think, was the first time in 100 years we grew.
Yep.
And there are people that do believe, there are people that believe North Dakota does not want to grow the population on purpose. And they're there is a segment that believes the North Dakota laws are structured to keep people out. And if you look at the last 150 years, what are we, about 500,000, 650,000, whatever? Anyway, we haven't moved much is right. What I'm getting at. That's been conspiracy talk for 20 years in this state.
Well, you know, the thing that's interesting about it, though, is, you know, I've been in so many rural communities where publicly people say, hey, we really want to see our small town grow. You know, for years, I've been here 20 years in rural towns. I don't know why I do that, folks. You know, that's just sort of blood, sweat, and my ex-wife's tears on that deal. I don't know why I continue to do this, but I'm in these small towns. And everybody will tell you that they want that town to grow and they want to attract people, but nobody believes less in their town than the people that live there. So there is a sentiment that goes deep to the root of, you know, we don't believe that, you know, sort of like this. North Dakotans are never truly happy unless we're in a continual state of pain and suffering. I mean, this is true, right? Like, you know, you just look at our lives. Like, we take great pride in everything that's hard. The weather is bad, and, you know, it's tough living, North Dakota tough. And all of these things that sort of define us as tough, hardy people. The reality is, I've had instances where we tried to move and relocate families into small towns. I'm talking towns of less than 1,000. And there was resistance, cultural resistance around that. It had nothing to do with race or anything like that. It was just outsiders.
Just change.
Yeah, xenophobia. But, you know, North Dakotans typically are not xenophobic. And
no, we're too passive aggressive.
Well, yeah, true. But the thing about it is that when we saw our brothers and our sisters leave, we saw the best and the brightest sort of move to the bigger towns, mm-hmm. or then move to Minneapolis or move to Arizona or Chicago or wherever. It was sad, and so we would do anything. You know, I always heard this. I've heard this for decades. We would do anything to help this town. You know, I'd do anything. And so when this boom rolled around, and the asks were around infrastructure, or the asks were around accommodation or policy or business friendly, those communities bent backwards because they didn't want to lose that opportunity. And especially, I would say, after the 2011 timeline. We could make the argument policymakers, like they are, government is reactionary, it's not proactive. And so there was tension between the communities and the government in terms of allocation of resources. But I think the thing that we're going to want to pay attention to, particularly now, and I've said this for about 3 years, is declining property values. What you're going to start to see now is, you're not reading about this, but I'm getting my property tax bills now and they're going down. My assessments are going down. In Minot, for example, all of our property value assessments went down. And so when we built our budgets based on flat and, you know, not an increasing property value, but a flat, and now we are now seeing decline, we start to wonder about that compression of services. We start to look at, you know, Dickinson, $100 million bond to debt. You know, where is all that going to go? Dickinson escaped that in the last cycle, as you know. They went into this one with almost no municipal debt. And there was a big debate. Do we do the water treatment? You know, do we bond? And because Williston, you know, had taken back 30% of the city. You know, in the last, I remember the maps. I mean, you know, on the eve of this whole thing, when we were building, the city gave us 10 acres of land for zero. I mean, in the middle of the town that they owned. You know, you're not going to get that deal today, right?
No.
But at the time, it was red blotches of all of the properties that just went back to the city. And that was because they had a lot of debt that they had incurred. Now, Dickinson and some of the other bigger towns said, well, we don't want to do that. But they got forced into it after about 2012. Mm-hmm. They either had to spend it and invest it or lose the industry.
I remember Dennis Johnson, Mayor Dickinson, on my program in 2012. I don't want to say bragging, but wearing a badge of honor. They were debt free back in 2012.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
The next year at the 2013 North Dakota County of they're called the Western Dakota Energy Association now, but they were the oil and gas producing counties. Flash forward a year, Dennis Johnson, mayor, is up there saying, we're so far in debt, none of you folks better really get into debt.
Okay, but hold on.
We can't have another pipe in the ground.
But let's talk about that for a second. This is not 1984.
No.
This is not 18%. These cities were able to bond at 3.5% to 4%.
Exactly.
And these are on 30-year bonds. So look,
this isn't buying a house for 18%.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And so the bottom line is this, that credit accessibility of very low-cost capital for the municipality may be, in the end, what saves them. Now, we still have a ton of cash, and you've seen this reflected by some of those trust funds that I used to write about being, you know, reallocated and utilized. But that was the buffer. That was what it was there for. God bless the policymakers for being pretty conservative. We did need the money. But it is now, I think, my assessment is this. In this cycle, the apex of the cycle was in June of 14 was the top. Okay? And here's when you know the top in any cycle. It's in the news all the time, and everybody from New York comes to North Dakota and says it's going to be a new normal. Okay, I can assure you that nobody wants to live in North Dakota long-term unless they have a job. Okay, that's just a news flash for everybody. So when people are saying, hey, these are going to be condos down the road and, you know, in Ray, I'm like, you're out of your mind. Nobody lived here before, and they won't live here after.
You're lucky if it's a nursing home.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, but the move is for
look, it's cold,
to go into cities.
Look, it's cold and hard.
But that was the model of
can
the small town.
Can you believe I sold
before.
My oceanfront home to move to North Dakota?
But that
before
was
the
model.
Oil boom.
I know.
I don't know.
What are you doing
and
that
marijuana
for?
Wasn't even legal back then.
It's not. It's not even legal yet.
No, I. Hate
they haven't even christened the new
I hate
laws.
It. It's so gross.
Speaking of,
anyway.
By the way, let's
talk about housing.
Mike Marcil, Orange Property Management, with us. He's got a number of properties up in Western North Dakota as well as across the state. We wanted to bring him in here to talk about the new housing crunch out there. I did a story a few years ago about how there was a big issue out in Western North Dakota because, number one, a lot of the pro formas, a lot of the projections were done at 75 to 100% occupancy because the $100 oil was going to last for 100 years.
Newsflash, they were always 100%
occupancy. I know, but you know what I mean. And so, you know, you go back to, what, $50 oil, whatever it is. Now you got half occupancy, if you're lucky, and half the rent. So really you're at more like a 25%.
No, it's not half the rent. It's a third.
A third. But you see what I mean. Yeah. Where I'm saying is that the people will come out and say, oh, we're at 50% or 75%. But really if you peel the onion back, you're really more like 25, 30 to 40%. That was a couple years ago.
Yep.
Now we're looking at, what, $1,000 to $1,500 rents? Update us where we're at now.
Yeah, okay. So here's the good news. And this is going to be the story, I think, for the next 2-3 years. And it's a wonderful story because here's what it really creates. We know there's going to be an industry in that region, but it won't be the same kinds of people that were needed in the first phase of the 10-year of the cycle.
Right.
So when we look at kind of the permanent primary sector type workers there, their wages didn't go down. The actual skill level needed to operate a lot of the more the higher end technologies in those areas actually is a much higher paying job. What we did see is some of the different types of workforce, like water haulers and things like that, through technology and some, you know, innovation, those sort of got disrupted. Mm-hmm. Now, you see less overtime. That's what a lot of guys live for out there. But we didn't see a decline in wages in the amount we pay. So let's just break this out for a second. So let's just say at the height of the boom in 2014, you had people going out there, right? And they were making, let's say, 100 grand a year.
Okay.
Okay, let's just do the real quick math on that.
Easy math.
Easy math. Two guys, they go out from Louisiana, and they're going to make $200,000. Now, they're paying, let's just say they're paying $2,500 in rent. That's $30,000 a year. Right, cheap.
No. Back then it was, yeah.
Yeah, in Fargo, you're making $40,000.
Well,
you couldn't make it
work. When I was out in Dickinson, it was a 600-square-foot place for $3,000.
Yep. So let's just use the assumption at that time that 25% of their disposable income was going to housing, and there was nothing else to spend money on out there because there was nothing there.
So $100,000... $2,500 a month, right?
Well, let's just say $25,000. Whatever,
okay.
Yeah. So, fast forward it to a couple who wants to go open a barber shop or a gun range, which just opened up in Williston. The same amount of people that live there now, if they make $20 an hour, okay, that's
$40,000 a year.
$40,000 a year, okay, times two, that's a couple working, that's $80,000. The rent today in that for that couple for a two-bedroom apartment is $7,200 a year. Okay? So they're paying 8% of their income in housing. And the cost of living out there has compressed dramatically, meaning our utility bills are pretty low in Western North Dakota. They just are. You know, trash and sewer, pretty low. Schools are free. It's public education, right? So
brand new school, too.
Brand new schools.
Watford City,
rec centers,
new
parks, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So what do these people do with the 80% of disposable income? Okay. They have nothing to spend the money on. There's no nice restaurants to go to. There's no not a lot of retail out there. Okay, I'm sure Amazon's benefiting.
I was going to
totally
say,
different conversation, but yeah.
I'll bet you online shopping is the most beneficial. Because, listen, Watford City's got some great places to eat, but there's only a handful.
Right, correct.
And I'm sorry, man.
But they're full today.
You
still.
You serve me steak every night of the week. Eventually, I'm going to ask, where's my lobster?
Yep.
You know, that's just how we are. We want some variety every now and then.
Right.
And what Mike's getting to is a huge story that's going on right now. And this is, I call it the micro boom of the Bakken right now, which is
echo boom.
There's a discretionary income boom going on right now. With take Mike's example of $100,000. Let's say your 25% housing goes down to 15 or 10.
10.
Okay, 10. You just got a $15,000 raise,
yep,
in discretionary income because your rent went down because the Bakken is now getting streamlined.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? It took a few years for the oil companies to streamline their wells. So it ripples down then afterwards, and now it's rippled down into housing. And then I was even talking to some hotel people the other day. Those rates have gotten down to be competitive with Fargo, Bismarck, Billings, everything else.
Except for like the Hampton, the nicer ones. They've
okay.
kept higher rent rates.
They're
yeah.
getting enough of the executives
yep.
and everything? Because
yep.
they got their niche. They got their clientele.
Yeah, by the airport,
okay.
I would
okay.
say.
Well, that makes sense.
Sure.
Yep. Well, good for them. You know, good mm-hmm. for them because they found their niche and they went with
but
it.
But you're going to see some hotels get plowed into the ground, too.
I was going to say, that's
yeah.
for the 1%.
Yep.
Okay. Storage almost full. Look at that. You know what? We got it. Anyway.
Jeepers.
It's a good thing we got this going on the radio program as well. Because we are multimedia here. Part of the content advertising show.
He's got a Commodore 64 in the back room over there. And we have a whole operating mm-hmm. system we're building on Commodore 64.
And this weekend, a nice ColecoVision tournament. Remember ColecoVision?
Yes, I remember that. And my Timex computer,
exactly.
which I couldn't program because I couldn't do math.
So let's kind of wrap it up because I know you got a conference
yeah,
call at
yeah.
11. Discretionary money, housing, what's the moral of the story?
I think the moral of the story is when you don't see things in the news is the time that you want to start taking a look at what's going on because you haven't seen bad news, you haven't seen good news, you've seen no news. I'll give you an example. I'll close it out at this. You know, we do a lot of banking with local, regional, national banks, and so we had a meeting recently and they said, hey, we don't have any visibility on what's going on out in the western side of the state. There's nothing being reported. Jason's one of the few guys out there that's talking about this stuff. But it's sort of like the takeaway is we're too unnormal. And the normal is healthy. And it's and the lifestyle that was so painful in 13, 14, 12, 9, 10 that you'd read about has been changed with what I believe is a very comfortable, affordable, beautiful opportunity for people to work and live
mm-hmm.
and raise their families. And so we're seeing people want to buy a home, people are going to stick around, not everybody. And I think a lot of the bad actors just kind of came out of the market quick. And the people that have stayed are sort of, you know, kind of cleaning up a little bit of that. But long term, I hear people that have from all over the United States have said, you know what, we're here, we like it here, we've kind of started to develop a community here. We have service organizations starting to evolve. We got people that are involved in PTA. We've got kids in schools. And they're not from North Dakota. They're creating a new community. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think market seek levels, when you can have now the cheapest rents in the United States and the best jobs, I think you might have a different type of opportunity. It's not as sexy as, you know, drilling a whole bunch of oil and changing the world economy, but it's about the hairstylist, the auto shop guy, the retailer, the grocery store, the furniture store. Can you believe Watford City, a town of that size, does not have a furniture store? As basic as that is, they still don't have a furniture store. So those are the kinds of opportunities I think we're going to see over the next few years. I'm excited about it. We're out there. We're investing there. cautiously, quietly, but from a community perspective, we believe in North Dakota, we believe in those markets, and we believe in the people of North Dakota.
And that's part of the thing about North Dakota is that we are this test ground, and we are a big part. In fact, we had a guy just on at the National Regulators meeting in Baltimore yesterday, and North Dakota was a big part of it because of our fracking and because of what we've been able to accomplish over the last several years. What Mike's talking about is that what you're going to see more than anything, the last several years have been devoted to efficiency, streamlining, refracts. The oil companies are fine-tuning. Now you're going to see the picks and the shovels come out in this gold rush, because the gold rush is still going on right now. It is. It's just, it's a little more elongated because really what we've got is a commodity play. There's no more wildcatting. What we talked about earlier, that was a huge deal going from wildcatting to we know exactly where the oil is. All we need is a price to be this, and then we'll go drill. That's where we're at. And that's why it's
I call it manufacturing. Because to me, it's very reminiscent of manufacturing.
Yeah, it's almost even like silver mining, too, and a number of different things. But where we're at is in North Dakota, this is a five-generation play. Five generations. So not my kids, not my grandkids, but my grandkids are going to be still on this Facebook page right now with Mike's. And they're going to be talking about...
It might be a neural implant at that point.
It probably will be. We'll be some three-dimensional Obi-Wan save me image type of a thing.
I just want to get downloaded as soon as possible. Get me out of this body stat.
It's breaking down.
God, it's old.
It's breaking down. Also, but before we close, a couple things we want to mention is one, with our partnership that we have here, our content advertising distribution share, we reach over 100,000 people on social media.
At least.
We've got 30 radio stations that carry our content. And last year, over 26 newspapers and magazines carried our content, as well as the online places.
And we get picked up on Google News.
And we get picked up on Google News and iTunes and a number of different things. Yeah. So if you're a millennial or you're a veteran about ready to retire, or you're a woman or a man, or you like Trump or you like Obama, we got all the demographics covered is what I'm getting at. And you know what? We stay out of politics. We just want you to have the information so you can make money so the politicians won't take any more so they can get fed. How's that?
I love it. Yeah, I mean, not being political. We're trying to be informational here and just make it substantive. I think that's important.
I'll never forget a guy from, I believe it was Neighbors, who said this to me, and this is not reflective. Okay, it was an oil guy, and he wasn't for Neighbors. It was just doesn't matter. That wasn't part of the story. Anyway, we were talking about taxes one day, and he looks at me, and he goes, yeah, you know, the president's got to eat. He goes, got to pay our taxes. The president's got to eat. And when he put it in that perspective, I couldn't stop laughing. So
I got to bring my kids to school every morning. Yeah, that's about what I think about in the morning, not taxes.
All right, man. Well, that's going to do it. Mike Marseille with Orange Property Management. Also, Bakken.com. Jason Spies with The Crude Life. Also, Bakken.com.
Also known as the better looking one of the two.
That's debatable. If you want to go ahead and put messages down, that's fine. You can certainly do that. And that's going to do it for this. If you got any interview ideas, let us know. If you want to sponsor this program or you know anybody, feel free. We're always looking for people who want to sponsor us because we want to make sure that you get that information out there to the masses, and use us, because that's really what we're about. We're getting you the information to make your life a little bit easier. And that's it. Mike, you got anything else?
Nope.
See you later.
Mike.
And that was Mike Marseille, CEO of Orange Property Management and Bakken.com. To listen to this podcast or other podcasts, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly Crude Life newsletter. We're also on social media. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter. And once again, I'd like to thank you for supporting our sponsors here at the Crude Life Media Network.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Well, don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Greg Tavine of Emerging Prairies has to say about Hatch coaching.
When you get Eric Hatch involved in something, you get 100% of him. You get him, you get his team, you get his family, now you get his kids. This is a guy that puts his heart into his work. What I really appreciate about Eric is his vulnerability. And there's times he hits home runs, and there's times where maybe it doesn't go the way everybody hoped. But I've always respected how much he loves his work. I got to watch him give a talk at TEDx Brookings, where he gave a talk, and I saw him come into his own, where he shared uncomfortable things from his past in a way that created a teaching environment. It's been said that if you want to create competition, tell everyone your success, and if you want to create compassion, share your weaknesses. And Eric's somebody that could easily lead with all he's accomplished, and it's a long list.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching, or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com. Or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. That's it for this episode. My name is Jason Spies. Till next time, be happy, and remember, sometimes life can just be crude. We'll see you next time, folks.
I'm walking, I'm talking, I'm smoking, I'm choking with the people that I know. I'm thinking, I'm drinking, I'm spinning, I'm grinning. Hope my car stops when I go.
The music on today's program is written and performed by the Moody River Band. To find out more about the Moody River Band or their music, visit our website, thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musician tab. That's thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musicians tab.
Car's dead, the engine's froze, I feel the wind chill down to my toes. Well, I'm glad I don't live too far away. Well, the moonlight shining on my walk home, I'm breathing in cold air, exhaling smoke. So quiet, I can hear it all. And I'm walking out. Hope my car starts when I